everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. Interweek. And we're here today to talk to you about a couple of things that I've noticed around recently. And one of the things I've noticed recently is about kindness. I want to talk about kindness. Kindness, it's such a right word for such a powerful thing. In the Manual of the Sanities, imagine someone wrote such a book. The Manual of the Sanities, it's not a written book, but if you were to think about it, what makes a person sane? Well, wisdom and knowledge do. That could be one of the criteria. Wisdom and knowledge, which include being creative, being curious, being open-minded, the love of learning, and having perspective, you know, being able to put things in place. I think that we would call that, among the wisdom and knowledge, these attributes are definitely valued, and we would love to have them. Then the second value, which I think is the second highest, is courage. Courage, which includes bravery, which means not to avoid pain, but to deal with pain as it comes by. And not just to run from it. If things get rough, you don't have to get going. Integrity is another quality of courage. The belief in fighting for what you believe. And vitality is also important in courage, because deadness is one way that people cover up, but that's not courage. You know, if you lay around and you do nothing at all, you could say you have integrity, but it's not courage, because you're not out there in the world. Vitality is essential. So we have wisdom and knowledge, and then we have courage, and then we have humanity. Humanity, which includes love, social intelligence, and the thing I want to focus today, kindness. And finally, as in the Manual of the Sanities, there's justice. The sense of justice, the sense of citizenship, belonging to something, and being fair, which is different than kindness. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I think I might even throw in temperance. You know, temperance is kind of an important quality, so if you show me a person who I want as a friend, I want him to have temperance, because temperance is somebody who has forgiveness and mercy, humility and prudence, self-regulation. In fact, if I were to go a step further, let my new friend be transcendent as well, which is the appreciation of beauty, a person who could be in the present, who has a sense of excellence, and at the same time a sense of gratitude, a sense of hope, and a sense of spirituality. So that's it. I would stop with those. And, you know, show me a person who's got these qualities and that's a person I want to call my friend. I'll go over them again with you because I think you might find them interesting. Wisdom and knowledge, and then I have subcategories. Courage, I have subcategories. Humanity, there are subcategories. Justice, temperance, and transcendence. And the qualities included are creativity. You need creativity, you know. Even though I know a lot of people can't be creative, somewhere you have to foster it, muster it, find it. Curiosity, open-mindedness, the love of learning, and perspective, being able to put things in the right place. And then there's bravery, integrity, vitality, love, and social intelligence, which means how you get along with other people. Citizenship, which is a recognition that you belong to something, and you work for the sense of that thing. Fairness, which is a belief in justice. And temperance, which is, of course, forgiveness, mercy, humility, and self-regulation. And finally, transcendence, which is the appreciation of beauty and the ability to be in the present. These are the things, my friend, that matter to me. And that are truly a sign of a well-balanced being. Because if you wonder about it, you know, all of these things, we would all love to be all of these. You know, we would love to be wise. We'd love to be knowledgeable. We'd love to be courageous and humane, just and temperable or temperant, transcendent. We'd love to be it. But, you know, very often we say, but I'm too busy to do all of that stuff. I don't have the time. Kindness is what I'm going to focus on. And I'm going to look at these other issues a little at a time over the oncoming weeks. You know, evolutionary psychology, which is the study of the psychology of the evolution of mankind, right? Evolutionary psychology and kindness are very interesting as they intertwine. Because where would kindness develop among humans as they're evolving? Well, it's kind of essential. The survivors are the ones who are connected. And being connected means at times you're not just taking care of yourself, but you're also paying attention to the people on your right and your left, and not just your family. Being able to survive in a community, which is the only way that humans could get by, because they couldn't get by on their own. They didn't have the teeth, they didn't have the claws, they didn't have the fur. They weren't able to survive alone. Humans are puny in this world. But as a community, they survive. Like ants survive. You know, a community of ants. You know, if you put all the ants in the world together and you weigh them, they weigh more than all the humans in the world. Did you know that? Just saw that in National Geographic last month. A lot of ants. I wonder how many uncles there are. Okay. The survivors are the ones who are connected. Finally got it. Survivors are the ones who are really connected to each other. So belonging to something and being a part of something and being able to be kind, which means to go beyond your needs. So let's say you go out and you go find a woolly mammoth for dinner. Right? And you drag home the woolly mammoth, and the guy in the next cave has no woolly mammoth to eat. Right? And you go over and your wife brings over here's a piece of woolly mammoth for your family. Kindness. You know, it's hard to find good woolly mammoth nowadays. Especially the organic kind. Okay. So being able to go along with your group and being able to support your group in a kind of way with consideration is not just an act of greed. Being able to belong to something, being able to be a part of something is not easy. Some people find it very difficult to do. Woody Allen once said, I would never want to be a member of a club that would have me as a member. You know, most of us feel like we're so miserable that we can't belong to anything because we're so different than everybody else. Look at all those happy people. You know, there are churches, there are clubs. I don't care what it is. You could be part of a co-op board. You could be part of a some kind of a swim club. You could be part of a baseball team. Whatever you're a part of, you have a sense that there are people there that you get close to that you're going to take care of as well as they're going to take care of you. If they're on your team, you're going to take care of them, not just for your own greed, but because something in you wants to take care of them, just as if something in them wants to take care of you. Kindness is the act of charitable behavior to other people. That's the definition. It is considered to be one of the knightly virtues, you know, like of the Knights of the Round Table. Kindness was one. And it's considered a valuable characteristic in almost every culture and religion. It's one of the seven virtues, and it's opposed to the seven deadly sins, especially envy. Envy and kindness are very opposite. Interesting, don't you think? Aristotle's two books on rhetoric, he describes kindness as one of the emotions, and it's described as, get this quote, helpfulness towards someone in need, not in return for anything, nor for the advantage of the helper himself, but for the advantage of the person being helped. So it's giving without getting. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to look at this because now we run into the difficulty. I could sit around and say we should all be kind. Isn't that easy? Of course we would. We're going to take your calls later, by the way, Michael, you might want to know. We will be taking calls. Now, what is the difference between when you are kind and when you are not kind? I have seen myself in such a hurry at times that I completely ignore people. I could be rushing. You know, I remember the other day I'm one of these people who know how to get taxis because I'm a big guy and because I understand taxi cabs. If I see a taxi cab even wincing as a possible, possibly going to the right or left or where it is, I know how to find it because I'm a street guy and I remember how taxis function. However, if somebody else needs a taxi and I need a taxi, I'm going to usually give it to the other person if they need it more than I do. If I see somebody who's suffering, if I see somebody who's feeble, I mean, no matter how much of a hurry, but sometimes I don't care. I'm just a hawk. I'm out there. I'm in a hurry. I got to get to my office. I have a patient waiting for me. Boom, I get in the cab. And I realize that I left somebody in my wake. You know, I mean, it may have been the next person there to get it. Maybe I didn't do anything unfair, but it feels wrong to me. But sometimes I realize I don't have my kindness screwed on. Sometimes I separate myself from the human race. I separate myself from my connectiveness, from my kindness, from my caring about people because I'm in a hurry. Well, what are the other things? What are the things that make us, separate us from being kind? Since we know being kind is what we would like to do. Well, here are some of the things that seem to get in the way. Fear and suspiciousness can easily prevent you from being kind. You're afraid that if you're going to be kind to this person, they're going to take advantage of you. Tension. If you're really tense, and I've seen people recently who I care for a great deal who are very tense. And when they're very tense, oh boy, especially when they feel wounded or vulnerable, they lose their kindness. You can see it. They're not even paying attention to the people around them. And it's an interesting thing. People around you respond when you're not kind, when you don't have that little kindness. Now, I'm not talking about sweetness, and I'm not talking about, you know, being sweet and being overly sweet. I'm talking about kindness, the recognition of another human being. And when you do it, it's amazing. And when I don't do it, it's really, I get certain responses from people. I could tell when I get annoyed. I was talking to somebody on the phone the other day about installation of a wireless network, and I had to be talked through it. It was a guy from Verizon. He did not speak English, and he was answering the phone to talk me through it. He did not speak English. He barely spoke English. He had such a heavy accent and didn't understand half of what I said. But it turned out that I surrendered, and I listened to this man, and he talked me right through it perfectly. He knew every word to say to me, and he talked me right through, and it was very efficient, more efficient than it would have been, I could think, if the person spoke more English. Because as soon as I saw that he didn't have mastery of the language, I felt annoyed because I knew it was going to take a long time, and then I just said, hey, let's do this together, and it was perfect. So if you have a little clicker inside you that goes off when you're not kind, you see, if you have that, if you have something, that's really an advantage. Most people I know have that clicker off a lot of the time, or maybe at certain times of the month, you know, or maybe when they're in certain situations or certain tensions, or when they're wounded. You'd be amazed if you take somebody who is normally fit, physically fit, if they feel the slightest wound, if they feel a certain part of them broken, they become a totally different animal. You know, a little part, it could be a finger. You know, it could be an ankle. It could be just something small hurts them and it's out of whack. And they suddenly go from being the kindest, most considerate people to being somebody who's got to take care of themselves with a kind of a frustration and desperation behind it. That's why it's good to be broken all the time. Have a little part of you broken all the time. So then when you get broken, it's not that big a deal. Anger will do it. Tension will do it. Jealousy. Jealousy is such a killer to kindness. Let me tell you about jealousy. It's murder. Jealousy and envy. You know, both, which are different. If you feel envy, you can't be kind. You could try to be kind. You could make believe you're kind. You could fake it. But you can't really be kind because it's false. Now, a lot of people fake kindness. A lot of people are pleasing. A lot of people want to please you. But they are giving to get. That's the difference. The ones who are always kind and always considerate and always nice and always self-sacrificing are looking to get loved in return. And you kind of can tell it because they are in your face. Very often, someone's kindness can be an act of seduction. You find somebody who finds out that if they give you extra special consideration, you'll be taken aback because you're not used to it. So they are so kind, and they send you things, and they give you presents, and they give you gifts. And it touches some part of you that needs it so much that you're ready to sign over your mortgage. You know, you're ready to sign over your house. You're ready to do anything. As an act of seduction, kindness is one of the things that touches us humans because we need it so much. Because kindness is like a caress, you know? It's like being held. Another thing that stops kindness is greed. Greed gets in the way. I mean, Wall Street, and I worked there for 10 years of my life. When I was working downtown, I remember kindness was kind of missing. You know, it was just very little, even politeness was tough. Politeness is one level. Underneath politeness comes kindness. But everything was moving fast, and it was dog-eat-dog, and that's why I left when I was 29 years old. So fear, suspicion, tension, anger, jealousy, greed, envy. Holy cow, it sounds like the seven deadly sins. The seven deadly sins are all about the blocks to kindness. There it is. We had it right in front of us. You want to know what stops you from being kind? Look at the seven deadly sins. And every one of them get in the way. We want to take your calls and talk to you about this as well today. Kindness is what we're talking about. You know, I don't even like the word kindness. I don't like the IND sound of it with the K, you know, kindness. I mean, compassion is a different kind of word. It's a little sexier. Kindness, it's a puny word. It's a kind of a passive word. For such a powerful process, an act of kindness, an act of generosity, an act of giving with nothing in return, without getting anything in return, an act of being kind, of giving your seat to someone when they look like they need to sit on the subway, without getting anything back when you're doing it, such a powerful thing. Such powerful glue in our universe to be kind. Such a thing, such a way of touching people. I know a man who was the most egocentric, self-centered, self-involved, narcissistic guy I ever met. Yes? Wasn't that a nice description? Every time he met anyone, no matter who it was always about what this person could do for him. I've seen him turn his back on people who were unattractive, or they didn't seem like they had money, or he just, you know, he was just serving people in the waitresses or waiters. If they didn't have something that they could afford to him, like complimenting him or flirting with him, he had nothing to do with them. He had no time for people who could not be of benefit to him. So I knew this man, and I'd see him occasionally. And then he told me a story. We were talking about something about giving to people, and then he described the story. He said every Christmas, he goes to a supermarket, and he buys a package of those Italian-wrapped chocolates. What are they called? Bocce or something like that, with a little nut in the middle, the silver wrapping on them. And on any cold night, he puts them in his overcoat when he walks out of his condo on Fifth Avenue, and he puts them in his pocket, and he takes a walk down the street, and whenever he sees a homeless person, he reaches into his pocket and he gives them a chocolate. He says, and I give them a chocolate and I watch how they warm up and how fine and how grateful they are. And sometimes I give them two. And that's what he considers his big act of giving back to society every Christmas. And he'll tell you if you ask him, you know, hey, you give anything back? This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. You know, driving a car, if you're a driver of a car, this is really important. Kindness in traffic is essential for traffic to work. Now, have you ever driven in Rome? Rome is, it's lunacy. Driving. The cars are small, but they are fast, and they can be within inches of each other. Same thing in Paris, but it's almost in every, in Boston, certainly, for sure. Traffic is dependent on kindness, because even though people challenge each other for every inch of space, even if you're in one of these other countries, there may be 6 inches between cars. But there is a consideration of the other driver, not just for banging. It is a consideration of that you and I are in the same thing, and we're all trying to go someplace together. And if I have to yield for you, I yield for you. It's like a traffic circle. There are times that you give in. There are times you don't give in. Driving a car in Manhattan, if you're driving a car and you're making a turn onto a street from an avenue, let's say, or onto an avenue from a street, and you're about to make a turn, and there are people who are crossing the street. You know, they have the right to cross because the light is theirs, and you come next. You could take a turn. You could see how kind you've been by the look in their eyes when they spot you. If they look at you with fear, you're low on your kindness. Because somehow about driving, you understand to hold back just enough so that that person doesn't feel frightened by you, the driver. Drivers should never scare people. They shouldn't get that close. You know, there are certain towns I know of in Long Island where it's the rule that if a person steps off the curb, you must stop your car and they get the right of passage. And I've seen people who find that a very difficult thing to live with. Driving and kindness are really critical, especially with speed and when you're trying to get things done. But, you know, we all know things are some part of us. There's some part of us that wants to be able to reach down to that part of us so that we could be a part of the community that is healing at all times. It is very difficult. But in every place I've ever seen people working together, I look for where the kindnesses are. Are they there? Are the considerations there? Is there a little extra something that somebody brings to the place? Look around you, my friends. Ask yourself, where could you be more kind? I mean, even sitting in a lunchroom. Imagine sitting in a lunchroom with the person who nobody sits with. Even saying hello. You know, you don't want to invite them into your group. Unkind. See what you could do about it. Because that's our job. It's the only thing we could do. The world is out of whack. You know, in the 60s, we used to take acid and get crazy. Nowadays, we are crazy, so we take Prozac to get normal. I mean, something's happened. You know, we're in a society that is so wacky at this point that the only thing we could do is we could hold on to our humanity. And our humanity may not be global, and it may not be that forceful, you know, but every little gesture, every kind gesture, every smile makes a difference. And I hope to make that difference with you folks. 212-209-2900 is our number here. We will be taking your calls today. 212-209-2900. We're talking about kindness. Now, there are two kinds of people who are always kind. You know, there are some people who are always kind in the face of anger. You get angry, and they always become very kind. They become compulsively kind. But that's because they're afraid of anger. These are the people putting out the fires. They're putting out the fires. They're keeping everything calm because they don't want to have any anger displayed anywhere. And so they use a cloak of kindness to snuff out the fire. But it's not a true kindness. It's really meant to squelch the passions. It doesn't really, I mean, sometimes, you know, if somebody's really angry and hostile, it really is okay to let them be angry. Let them express it. Let them have it. But there are some people who can't stand that. So So they just pour honey all over the person until it smothers them to death, you know, until they can't open their mouth anymore and say anything. So that's one group. And the other group who's really kind all the time are the people who are giving to get back, which I said. So what about you? What's happened to your kindness and your consideration and your love of humanity? 212-209-2900. We're going to start with a telephone call. Let's take one call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there. Who is this?
Kathy? Hello?
Hello.
Okay. Well, my comment is in terms of looking back at the way we were in the 60s and 70s maybe compared to today, I think of one consideration is the economic changes and the way, certainly for me in, at United Airlines, but at the workplace, the difference between the employee and management, unions, different unions towards each other. Years ago, it was easier, and maybe in the States there was a expectation of better pay, good quality of life, and a lot of that has changed, I feel, today. And not just for me, I think, but for other, other corporations, and that seems to eat into people's kindness to each other.
Well, it seems to have eaten into yours, and I know exactly what you're talking about, because I know the airline industry, and right. I know people who work in the airline industry, and it used to feel like a cooperation.
Right.
It used to feel there was no separation. What's your name?
Kathy.
Mm-hmm. I remember when it didn't feel like it. It felt like we were all on the same team. You know,
exactly.
You were all on the same team, and it was all there. And then it got separated between unions and management and these struggles and watching out, and competition became
right.
such a big part of it.
Right, passengers.
It used to be a family, wasn't it, Kathy?
Yeah, it was.
And you lost your family.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it like now working for the airlines?
It's kind of like just a job with... You know, that doesn't mean much in a way.
You do your job.
Yeah.
What was the difference in your relationship to your passengers?
Well, it depends on the passenger, I suppose. Some passengers, believe it or not, and not that long after 9/11, were right back to demanding or wanting more, even though it was more for less, in a sense. And so that puts a lot of flight attendants off. And then, of course, there's passengers who are just, you know, also kind and polite and still nice and things. So really, it depends.
But, you know, I think there are more restrictions. I think there are more things you can do and can't do, and there's more things you're allowed to do and not do, and you have to be careful for, and you have to keep an eye out for.
Yes.
And you're not allowed to get as close as you used to get to the people. It used to be family. You get on a plane, and it was like everybody on the airplane was in the same family is what it felt like. It's like, okay, we're going to take a trip together.
Right.
You know?
There's a lot more suspicion, I suppose, if that's what you mean, looking at other
people. A lot of
stuff
that goes up there, absolutely.
Yeah, they're just wondering, yeah.
Well, Kathy, I want to let you know that you are part of this family, especially today, you know, being here and calling in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I thank you, and I sympathize with you completely.
And you're right, BAI is a part of my family, you know, a family now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For me.
Yep, we are, and I really appreciate it. Thank you for calling
thank
in.
Thank you, Armand. Bye-bye.
Sure. Armand DeMille here with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking more calls after our break. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music. My music is going to be, that you'll hear after we have two breaks, it's going to be dedicated to the people in Cuba. Because with the possible death of Fidel Castro or his illness, I know it touches many, many people who have considered him to be a real hero. So I want to play some music for Cuba.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener-supported and non-commercial.
Tahrir, liberation. Marhaba, I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz. Chuck Rear is a long WBAI tradition and still strong in voices of the Arab Muslim community here and abroad. I invite you to tune in Tuesday evenings at 7 for discussions on Islam and society, justice and injustice, in-depth interviews with writers from across the world, and Fen Mashnoon, Crazy Arts, with Dean and Maysoon.
Giving us this music by Nonas Pedro, Yiri Yiri Boom from Cuba. Picture Michael G. Haskins in the studio there doing a mambo. How could he control himself? He's such a dancer. And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. If you just tuned in, a little tribute to the country of Cuba, who is at the moment going through a major transition. And to all the people there, I hope the kindness prevails. God forbid the passing of Castro should unleash some of the aggressions that a lot of people I know would like to see unleashed. Hey, we're talking about kindness. You know, we're going to be talking about many other things. But the good news is that we have it in us. It's really okay. It's really possible to be kind. It's really, everybody's got it. What does it take? It takes a little extra minute. Now, time is this amazing thing. Time is a commodity here, especially in New York City, where we're from, which we're broadcasting, in case you're tuning us in from Haifa or from anywhere else right now. There are many of the countries where I hear from, many of the cities where I hear from, who people who listen to the show. We have this commodity in New York, this thing called time. It's not, how rich you are is not so much about what you own, but about how you command time in a funny kind of way. You know, you could get deliveries of things delivered to you if you have more money, even though they cost more money, because you could go out and buy them cheaper if you want to go shopping for them. But if you have that extra money, things are delivered to you. If you want, you don't have to stand online. You could buy reserve tickets, you know, if you have money. So money really buys time in many ways. It buys chauffeurs, it buys cars, it buys taxi cabs, it buys things that speed up your life, that help you not, you should pardon the expression, waste time. And wasting time to many people, like getting on a phone trying to, take a look at insurance, you know. You want to get in to see a doctor, and if you've got managed care, which saves you money, and it saves you money because it's the insurances are cheaper, then you have to get in line. Whereas other people are getting what do they call those doctors? Concierge doctors. If you've got a lot of money, you get a concierge doctor. Your doctor comes to you. That saves you 2 or 3 hours every time. So if money equals time, and it takes time to be kind, then you would imagine that money equals kindness. But no. See, with money comes, you got to keep your money, and you got to make sure nobody takes it away. So with money comes a kind of a suspiciousness or a kind of a caution. So now you can't be as kind, because you can only let people into a certain level. You don't want people to take advantage of you. It's a funny thing. The kindest people are very often the people with the least amount of stuff. They're just kind by nature, you know? Kindest people are the people who have close families. Kindest people are the people who have good relationships with their siblings. The people who are the least kind, they feel alone in the world. And they're at war. And they're just trying to get through. The interesting thing about those people is usually they don't have many babies. You know, usually if you're that much of a person who is very, very unkind, your children don't wind up having children. You know, I mean, somehow nature is trying to get you to be a little more kind. So nature is trying to develop a society of people who are warmer and nicer to each other, because the others don't survive. They make war. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hello, Armand?
Yes, you got me right here.
This is Brian.
Hello, Brian.
How are you, sir? That was very profound. And the woman that just called before the break, she just set the tone for the connection that we have to come out of. Because everybody has a job or is seeking one or needs money, and it's just putting, like you said before, putting things in perspective that would help to realize what money is to be used for. It's just a tool. I mean, just, you know, the pursuit of it and the misconstruing of the purpose of it. It's just a means to an end, and you have to make that end as basic as possible, because that's where you have the most fun. You're more fulfilled when we see the simpleness in things. I mean, like you're saying, remember when we were kids? I'm just coming up on 50. You might be a little older, you know, or younger.
Now, I'm a little older than you are.
Okay, beautiful. But we're still from the same type of generation where they told us that with all this technology coming out that we were going to have less work days. Everything was going to be easier. So what happened?
Yeah, and with more leisure, there would be more kindness, and so on and so forth. So let me ask you, are you surrounded by people or not? Are you somebody who's alone, or do you have a group?
My group is, like, I guess, like anybody my age and older, the group starts to diminish. Like, I lost my father just in January, my mother 2 years before that. But I have a sister that moved away,
So you must feel pretty alone.
Oh, I have grown kids that they don't call. You know how kids are; they don't call. But I have a nice wife. You know, I see her every night, and
that's a nice thing to have the connection. But now let me ask you something about your neighbor. I want to know about the person who lives next door to you.
Oh, you know that I had a little old lady across the hall. She was beautiful. I'd pick up things for
her. Yeah, but I want the one who lives next door.
Or the one next door? I hardly see him.
Yeah.
I mean, we bump into the elevator, and it's very nice. Oh, how you doing? This, and then we just go on our way.
Is there anything you could do for your neighbor that would be an act of kindness?
Oh, sure.
What would that be?
He works in a building here. If I could do something to make his job a little easier.
A nice thing.
I have to think of that, though.
I have to run down
what he does.
You see, the real thing is not to do it for recognition.
Oh, sure. Yes, yes.
You know, not to do it for that. It's like you bring somebody a bag of grapes.
Anonymously, almost.
You know, yeah, almost anonymous. Here, my wife went out and bought a bunch of grapes, and I was thinking about you working in the building, so here, it's a hot summer day. Here's some cold grapes.
I can get that. You know, sometimes we get so bogged down in just doing what we do. I mean, a lot of people would do that, but we just we just get so honed into our personal responsibilities that, when you turn around, it's time to go to bed.
Yeah, yeah.
What you just said, I get that. I get that. It's really nice.
Good. Good. Welcome, Brian, and thank you for your own kindness.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Okay. 212-209-2900, Kathy and Brian calling in. Yes, Kathy did set the stage. She does remind us that we keep losing a little bit of family feeling, and we don't even notice it's gone. It's almost as if, you know, there's a design that the more you can separate us, the less we'll oppose you, whoever you are. Now, I'm not getting separated. And if you're listening to WBAI, you're not getting separated because we are the family network. We're family radio in a different kind of way. 212-209-2900. I love laughing at my own jokes. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
It's Bob calling from Brooklyn.
Hello, Bob.
During your talk, I was reminded of the movie Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Did you ever see it?
Yes, sure. Sure. I think it's kind of a profound movie.
Absolutely brilliant. You know, underrated film. Although it's like a cult movie, but I really found it's... Although it was like a, you know, it has the look and feel of a Hollywood, you know, kind of generic film, it really delivers a profound, deeply spiritual message. And I'm trying to live that, but I find that unless, you know, I can't force myself to be kind. That's kind of... I'm very hard on myself, and I find that my impatience with other people is just symptomatic of my own rage towards myself.
Well, you know, now, there's an interesting question, Bob. You have had significant hardship in your life. I mean, I know who you are, and I know about the griefs that you've gone through. You've gone through so much stuff that there is a residual tension that just kind of lays around to protect you from whatever else might come to hit you, you know? So I think at the beginning, you start off with a kind of a tension, what's going to get me next? And it's very hard to go through that, but I can't see you criticizing yourself for being that way. I can't see that because, you know, you're really dealing with a very big deal of pressure that's been on you for a long, long time. It's not easy, you know, and when it's not easy, when a person's under a lot of tension, I guess that's the beginning of it. I think you've just kind of led me to how we can really start developing our sense of kindness for each other, and I guess the most important thing is to start becoming kind to ourselves.
Difficult.
It is difficult.
I found it in my experience.
When's the last time you bought yourself some grapes and gave them to yourself as a gift? Well, you know, when's the last time you did something nice for you?
I don't have a problem doing that kind of stuff. It's more of an internal kind of...
Shutting off the critical voice is very tough.
Well, what I was going to say is that there was a I find that when I feel when I'm the recipient of kindness, then I automatically, I guess my my amygdala relaxes.
Yeah.
And, I remember you saying something quite profound. When we're alone all the time, as opposed to being with somebody else, when we're alone, the amygdala is, you know, is always firing. And when we're with somebody, we feel protected and we can relax. So in the same way, when I feel recipient of kindness or compassion from somebody else, or somebody who's willing not to, you know, I'm not saying I'm a victim, but I find that even in therapy, it can be kind of a problem when a person doesn't really understand and they kind of take your words the wrong way and twist things, which, when I feel kindness from other people, I automatically relax enough to feel I can give it away.
Well, you know, automatic. Bob, it's very important because you, who perceive yourself, and really you do not present yourself as a victim, but you do know you've been damaged. You do see yourself as a hurt being, you know? And this is not your claiming for sympathy. I mean, I know you are, and I know you see yourself that way. When you're making a point about what it's like when someone is kind to you, when someone touches you with a smile, when someone does something kind for you, it opens up you and your desire to have to kind of pass it on, not just to reciprocate. And that is kind of the point of what I'm saying. I'm saying every time we get outside ourselves to do something with someone else, it trickles down everywhere. And every time we ignore an opportunity, we miss an opportunity, we've kind of missed a multi-opportunity. So I thank you for that, Bob, because you're kind of proving the point. When you get touched, you touch others.
I'll be in touch with you, Armin.
Thanks a lot, Bob. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Yes, the wise people of WBAI. 99.5 FM. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Armin, how are you?
Good. Who is this?
This is Austin.
Hello, Austin.
How you been?
Good.
Armin, I'm just a little troubled here. Work with me.
Sure.
I am of Cuban descent myself, and I consider myself to be a person of ample open-mindedness and, you know, very nuanced in my thought. And I'm kind of a loner for this because most people want me to be either Castro or not. But BAI seems to present a paradigm that is too much all Castro all the time, and the people I grew up with tend to be in the other polarity. And when you say something like a person who is admired by many, I'm wondering if we would say that with someone from Israel or Palestine, if we would, you know, present it so totalist as all this or all that, you know, as if you have to choose one or the other, and that's part of the problem that I see here.
Well, you know, I could see that you're really touched with it. And
yeah.
I knew, you know, when I say a person admired by many,
yeah,
and that not admired by many others and hated by quite a few, too.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know what's right or wrong. All I care about is that there's such a shakeup in that country, in that precious country that you
right.
came from. You know, they don't have all that much
right.
room to spare.
I totally agree, but my point is that if you said that totalist statement, admired by men, you took, let's say, Sharon or Arafat or whatever, you know, the outcry and the spillage from that would be huge.
Oh, I would say that about them as well.
Yeah.
I would say that about everybody admired by many. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're good.
Yeah, but I don't know that you would so casually pick out someone... like, let's say, Arafat, a departed person, and say that someone admired by many, because the fallout would be huge to that, I think. And I don't want to present this as an either-or. I'm just trying to put out the notion that we allow...
Well, let me ask you something. I want to ask you about you and your family now. What about being Cuban and your family connection? What is your what does your family feel about this?
They're divided.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
One was more like moderately leaning towards Batista, and the other one was heavy towards Fidel Castro.
And which was which? I bet your mom was more towards Castro.
I bet you're wrong.
Really? It was your dad?
Yeah, that shows you how convoluted my family was.
Wow. So who do you feel the most allegiance with, your dad or your mom?
Well, he's been gone for many years.
Do you miss him?
And, excuse me.
Are you there?
I would say that her by default.
I mean,
as a person, or you mean political view? Because this is two different issues here.
Well, you see, it sounds like different issues, but it's not different issues. When you're divided as a child and you feel that kind of division, it becomes really strong. In many ways, you know, to be faithful to your mom, you've got to be anti-Castro. To be faithful to your dad, you've got to be anti-Batista, you know?
But I'm not that extreme.
I'm sure you're not.
My father was completely pro-Castro, but I'm not of the Miami Republican faction. So, you see, this is the essence of my point. Just to allow for the space in between the sentences to breathe and be able to have a view that is more nuanced. And I think all of us would be healthier as a world if we allowed that.
Well, I think that's true.
And also allow me to be self-hating, because I think part of this is I react against ethnocentrism that is, I think, dispersed in too much Hispanic communities in general, where people aren't looking to within. So they project and latch on to the tribal collective, and that's part of what I'm saying. I tell my Jewish friends, you're allowed to be self-hating, but I'm not, because somehow you want to put me in a box that you're comfortable with.
Austin, I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. Let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hi there.
Can I talk to him
on
the air?
You're talking to Armand DeMille, and you're on the air right now?
Hi.
Hello.
I'm so glad I got through. I just wanted to say thank you for every Tuesday I have a day off, and I tune into the radio. And you're wonderful and lovely, but I wanted to just say that you were talking about earlier about kindness and money, and I just returned from doing art with kids in Honduras where I raised money and just went by myself to do it. And it's amazing how many people thought it was so strange and outrageous that I would go just by myself to this community. And the only thing that's keeping me from going back, of course, is I had to come back and make money. But I just wanted to say thank you for spreading the good word about love and light and just being good humans to one another. And I think New Yorkers forget that sometimes.
What's your name?
Amanda.
Amanda, you know the feeling of working down there in Honduras doing art with children, right?
Yes.
What is, just describe what the excitement is like when you see a child who can learn about the difference in color and suddenly gets the idea of what the difference in color is. What does it feel like when you watch the development of that which you've introduced to a child who you may never see again?
Well, I hope to see them again, but the way, you know what the feeling I likened it to having a baby.
Wow.
I know. I'm really a big lover. I have three older sisters and a mom, and my mother raised us with so much love and also some hard stuff too. But so going down and working with the children and experiencing their type of love, a type of love that like the outsider people think, oh, they're poor, they must be so happy. Everyone has their drama. Everyone has the stuff that they're going through. But to watch a kid to have like a oh, he just got it moment. Some of the most powerful, it's better than the best dance party you ever went to, the best sex you ever had, and I haven't had a baby yet, but I liken to that, to finding feeling my own child discovering something. This is how connected I was to this community.
Well, so, Amanda, that's quite a statement. I want to thank you so much for putting it that way.
You're such a babe. Thank you for spreading the love.
And you know, if you never have a baby, whether you do or not, it seems like you've really reared many, many children with the love of your work. So I really thank you.
Well, thank you. And do you think that just by giving out peace and love, I believe I, as a 30-year-old woman from California, New York is a bit of a trip for me, from California, I believe by spreading the love and giving it, that's the only way that we're going to find peace in our world.
I think you're right, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You enjoy your day.
Thank you.
Bye, dear.
Bye. From California, Amanda. Well, that's quite a beautiful codetta. Yes, we're all having babies, you know? I mean, it's like every time you touch someone, it's a child. Roy Eldridge playing Blue Moon in the background, and we'll leave you with that. This is Armand DeMille. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You could look at the website, The Positive Mind. www.BAIAtradition.com and hear many, many programs from the past. Or you can contact me through the website.